Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Nampak's pre-closed period conference call. All participants are currently in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions later during the conference. If you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please also note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Andre Verreter. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon and good morning, everybody. Thanks for dialing in on this afternoon before a long weekend in South Africa. We are flattered by your interest in our business, so thanks very much for joining us. With me on the conference call this afternoon are our CFO, Glenn Fullerton, and Nondyebo Mkhubana, our Investor Relations Manager. We have issued a SENS earlier today on our customary pre-close period trading update. I think we have adequately covered most of the topics that we wanted to share with you in the SENS announcement, so I'm not going to go through the SENS announcement line by line, but let me highlight a couple of key points before we open the line to questions. In our key markets, we have seen an improvement in the macroeconomic environment, which is very pleasing, on the back of an improved climate, economic climate in South Africa. We are seeing improved consumer demand and also improved consumer confidence, and that has translated into improved volumes, in particular for beverage cans in South Africa. So we are pleased at what we are seeing as far as demand in that part of the business is concerned. In Nigeria, again, the economy is doing rather better than it has been during the recession of 2017. Inflation rates are high, but we have seen demand for cans being particularly strong, and we anticipate that given the very large untapped consumer market in Nigeria, that we are likely to see sustained beverage can demand in that market going forward, to the point where we are now again contemplating the potential installation of a second line in that facility should these demand growth trends be sustained going forward. Metals, Bevcan South Africa, easing volume growth, higher than GDP growth. There is conventional wisdom in the packaging industry that packaging demand typically grows at 1.3 to 1.8 times GDP, and we have seen demand for cans in South Africa grow significantly above the higher end of that multiplier range. Of course, should this trend continue, our modeling indicates that the additional capacity that is introduced by the new entrance to the Bevcan market, as well as the fact that we are using the opportunity of a new entrant to rationalize our production capacity by closing down a line in Cape Town, an older, slower, less efficient line, for a total cost saving in the order of about 50 million rand per annum, that with the increased demand that the additional capacity introduced by the new entrant will be rather quickly absorbed by increased demand in the market. Angola doing well. Beverage can demand grows strong, stays strong, and we are confident that if we were to proceed with the conversion of the tinplate line to aluminium, we would be able to sell in the order of 1.5 billion cans per annum into that market. Current annualized market demand for Angola is in the order of about 1.1 to 1.2 billion cans per annum. So again, a strong performance from that market. Nigeria has come back very strongly. We are very pleased with what we have observed in that market, and it does appear as though consumer confidence has come back very strongly in that market since emerging from the financial crisis and since the normalization of the foreign exchange regime applicable to that market. We are having discussions internally about the potential resurrection of the project to install a second line in Nigeria, obviously depending on a sustained recovery in demand. Questions have been asked about the impact of a potential excise duty on alcoholic beverages in that market. Our inquiries have demonstrated that our customers do not anticipate that this will have an impact on demand for alcoholic beverages, and they certainly do not anticipate that this will be having an impact on can demand in that market. So we are relatively sanguine as far as the impacts of that are concerned. The food in South Africa doing quite well. As we indicated to you at our year-end results presentation, major customers have started to import significant quantities of frozen fish into South Africa. These are now being canned locally. All right, apologies. We seem to be having some technical difficulties this afternoon. I'm going to start off with plastics again. So plastics seen a moderate volume recovery after the drought in KwaZulu-Natal came to an end. Of course, that had an impact on dairy volumes. Ironically, the drought in the Western Cape has boosted demand for water packaging, so it is not a major dairy production area, so we have not seen much of a decline there. So all in all, the drought has not been bad for business as far as Cape Town is concerned. We have continued our efforts to turn around this business, and we will share with you a more comprehensive outline of a turnaround plan for the plastics business in South Africa, which includes further plant and capacity rationalization as well as cash fixed cost reduction in that business, which will lead to a smaller but more profitable business.
Zimbabwe Plastics doing well. We've got new customers. We are also seeing an improvement in liquidity. Glenn Fullerton will elaborate on that a little later. Plastics Europe doing better than we had earlier guided. We previously forecast that we would be break even for F18 with a return to profitability in F19. This we have now improved to be reflective of a return to profitability by H1 18, so we will see a modest profit there, return to profitability for the full year, and then obviously enhanced profits going forward from F19 onwards. Given the fact that we are making satisfactory progress in restoring this business to profitability, as well as the fact that we have made good progress in addressing the unfunded portion of the defined benefit pension liability, we are now in a position to start reconsidering the role of this business in the portfolio going forward. Yet again, it pains me to say that the disappointing part of our business has been the glass facility, which has not performed as well operationally as we would have liked it to. We have been able to, in the first 3 months of the current calendar year, to address the electricity supply issues that had bedeviled operational performance during the prior year. So that has been addressed, but we are still not in a position where we are able to achieve satisfactory operational efficiencies. bear in mind a message that we have shared with you previously, but which bears repeating, is that in 2012, Nampak acquired the 50% interest of Vegan Glass in the Nampak Glass business. And in addition to the payment for the 50% share, paid an amount of 321 million rand in goodwill and 240 million rand in creating an intangible asset that has been amortized over the past number of years. Following this acquisition, Nampak then proceeded to construct a third furnace, and the additional complexity, I think, has exposed operational weaknesses. We have been addressing these operational weaknesses by bolstering our management team and by introducing additional technical experts and resources. But in view of the fact that we are under pressure in order to improve the operational performance of this business, the board has resolved to classify this as a business that we wish to dispose of. And what that will do is that we will be approaching the market with a view to selling the whole or part of this business to a strategic glass player that will be able to introduce back into the business sufficient technical skill. Chris, if I can just pause here and ask if the line quality is better. Is it stable now?
Yes, sir, it is. It's much better. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. All right. Paper. Zim is a bit slower, but we are anticipating a very good tobacco crop in Zimbabwe, and we think that that is going to boost the second half results for paper in Zimbabwe, and is going to turn it into an improved performance. Cartons in Nigeria are doing particularly well. Again, another data point supporting our observations about an improvement in the average consumer sentiment in that country. Zambia and Malawi suffered during the first 6 months of the financial year from lower demand due to a change in packaging strategy by a major consumer in that market. In Zambia, that major customer has now been sold to a new owner, Delta of Zimbabwe, whom we know very well, and we are expecting an improvement in our paper volumes during the second half in Zambia as this sale takes effect. I would now like to hand over to Glenn Fullerton, our Chief Financial Officer, to deal with foreign currency movements as well as the cash extraction from key markets. Glenn?
Good afternoon and good morning to everybody. I think we've disclosed quite fully in this trading update certain of the foreign currency issues, but I think a few points that are worth noting is that there's been no further devaluation in the Naira during the period under review, and accordingly no impacts are expected on the financial results on that basis. The Angolan market is looking to devalue its currency. I think under the new president, Lorenzo, there's been a recognition that currency needs to be devalued and find a new level. And we were hoping that they would follow the example that was set by the Nigerians in introducing the NAFEX market, which was the Nigerian Autonomous Foreign Exchange Market that allowed importers and exporters in Nigeria to find one another. That market has been particularly useful in Nigeria, where it has resulted in a stable clearing rate of around 360 to the dollar, and has doubled the central bank's foreign exchange reserves to 44 billion in a reasonably short period of time, which has brought liquidity to that market. We haven't seen the same response by the Central Bank of Angola. Slower devaluations have happened, and despite those slower devaluations, the closing rate, if you compare September 2017 to the closing rate of the 28th of February 2018, that rate has devalued by 27%. It is our view that the Kwanza needs to devalue further than that for there to be an attraction for foreign investment. The good part, I think, from an AMPAC perspective is that we've managed to increase our hedging in Angola from 89% to 100% of our cash balances, which I think is very pleasing. And, you know, we've stuck with our strategy on that front. It would be beneficial for NAMPAC for that currency to devalue rather quickly and find a new level, as opposed to it take a significant amount of time, because we have bonds that mature over a period of, 2 years. And if the bonds mature at a point where the currency has found its new level and is fixed, offers far more protection to the income statement than if there's a gradual decline. What you'll notice is that we have indicated the maturity profiles of the bonds in Angola. 14% of those mature before the end of September 2018, 19% between the 1st of October 2018 and the 30th of September 2019, the balance of 67% before the 2020 year. We have provided very good protection to the shareholder in that basis, and for as long as those bonds are available to be purchased in the market, we will continue with those strategies. We have the cash balances in Angola and Zimbabwe, which we've defined as cash-restricted areas, have increased from 2.8 billion to 3.4 billion, so that's a 21% increase, and we'll unpack that for you. I think the very positive impact is that we've managed to extract 567 million rand from Nigeria and 239 million from Angola, bringing a total extraction from those two regions of 806 million rand. So I think very pleasing the progress has been made in that regard, and I think we have clearly demonstrated our assertion that Nigeria is no longer deemed to be the cash restricted area by that strong cash extraction. The cash in Angola has increased from 2.2 billion to 2.6 billion, and I think there's a very strong demand that we're still seeing there. There is still an in-country shortage of dollars, but pleasingly our cash extraction rate has improved from 47% to 68%. So I think that's gone in a very, very positive way. And we've managed to improve the cash extraction rate in Nigeria from 93% to 133%, resulting in the cash balance that was held at September 2017 of 828 million, actually reducing to 586 million rand. Zimbabwe remains extremely illiquid in terms of the ability to extract cash. We've only managed to get 1% out of the Zimbabwe economy back to our Isle of Man funding facility there. The cash balances have increased from 654 million to 841 million, and I think that goes to show that the business is extremely cash generative. So the Zimbabwean businesses continue to do well, and we are looking at working with certain of the authorities in country there to allow certain alternative uses of the money in country, and also a method to extract further cash. From a taxation point of view, just to remind you that the pioneer tax status in Nigeria came to an end on the 31st of December 2017. So that Nigerian operation will become a tax-paying entity from the 1st of January 2018. The effective tax rate in that region will be reduced through an accumulated wear and tear over the last 5 years that gets deducted from the accounting profit, as well as other taxable allowances that we can claim. Now, one of the significant allowances or deductions that one can claim is realized foreign exchange losses. And to the extent that these enhanced cash extractions have allowed us to repay the loan accounts between that Nigerian operation and the Isle of Man, it converts, in terms of the tax return, unrealized foreign exchange losses into realized foreign exchange losses, on which we get a 64% tax shield. Bearing in mind that those accounting losses in the main have already been processed through the accounting records up to September 2017. The Angolan tax holiday comes to an end on the 31st of December 2018, so the group's overall tax rate for this current financial year to September 2018 will be impacted by the issues that I've just highlighted, and also the relative contribution of Angola and Nigeria to the overall group profitability. So one has to, in terms of the accounting standards, international financial standards, make an assessment of what we expect the tax rate to be for the full year, which is quite difficult, trying to work out all the proportions for the year, and then utilize that forecast tax rate for the full year at the half year. And we have applied that in our processes to date. From a capital expenditure perspective, we remain extremely prudent on our allocation towards capital expenditure. At the end of last year, 2017, we guided the market on an expenditure of, between $1 billion and $1.2 billion for the financial year ended September 2018. We have been very prudent in our allocation of capital. We are applying very stringent criterion to the allocation of capital through our Capital Assurance Committee, and we would expect the capital spend during the year to be more in the region of the $735 million that we spent last year. So I think you can see very tight control over the allocation of capital, with capital expenditure, I think, in 2014 having peaked at $2.6 billion, dropping to $2.2, then $1.4, then $700 million, and we would think around the same level for this particular year. In terms of the debt restructuring and gearing, in my CFO report last year, I did highlight the maturity profile of the debt, and there are some debt funding profiles that mature during this current financial year. We are talking to a range of banking partners who are very supportive of the group, and our strategy is to build committed revolving credit facilities that will create a very stable and very diversified funding platform for the group as it goes through those maturity profiles. We will seek shareholder approval to implement those programs, and we will approach the shareholders when that is ready to present. I think from a gearing perspective, we've indicated to the market a gearing tolerance level or acceptable range for us is between 40 and 60%. We still remain committed to that, and we think we will be achieving that based on the current shareholders' equity that is in the business. And I think all the ratios that we're seeing at the moment are consistent and, if not, improving on the ratios that we indicated when we reported for the year ended September 2017. So all in all, I think the trends are pretty much in line with the previous messages that you've given. The financial status of the business is pretty sound, and there's a very strong focus on cash generation and making sure that the reins are kept tight on the finances.
Thank you very much for that, Glenn. If I can wrap up by again reiterating that we are seeking to dispose of the glass business. I think that's the big news there. We have held exploratory discussions with a number of strategic players, and we will be running a formal corporate finance disposal process pursue this sales process, which may involve selling part or all of the equity in that business in order to ensure that we are able to introduce the necessary technical skill. With the customary disclaimer about forward-looking statements, I would now like to open the lines for questioning, please.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, if you do wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone phone. If you decide to withdraw your question, please press star and then two to remove yourself from the queue. Again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one now. Our first question is from Nhlanhla Nkabi of Bank of America Merrill Lynch. Please go ahead.
Hi, everyone. Thank you for the call. I just wanted to ask, what is the profile of a potential buyer or partner of the glass business, and what would you potentially do with the proceeds that you get from that disposal?
As far as the first part of the question is concerned, we believe that there are a number of players who have the appetite to acquire this asset. We believe that the asset is fundamentally a good one. It is well capitalized. It has been well maintained. So for a strategic player, an international player, I don't think a local player would be able to make an acquisition purely from an antitrust perspective. But we believe that there are players out there that have the capacity to deploy the necessary skills in order to improve the efficiency of this business. As far as the utilization of the proceeds are concerned, that will obviously be a balance between looking at retiring debt, having regard to our targeted gearing range, and we could be looking at deploying that cash to other uses in accordance with strategic priorities that we have identified.
Thanks. Is it fair to assume now that the glass business will be disclosed as a discontinued operation?
That would be the intention, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. The next question is from Chris Logan at Opportune. Please go ahead.
Hi, Andre and Glenn. Thanks a lot. Just standing back a bit, you really acquired a handful when you took on your roles at Nampak. And in some ways, you're reaping, some tough times from the board, diversifying into too many areas of, putting shareholders' capital in areas where they didn't have technical skills. It's clear that, I think operationally you know what to do, but has there been a bit of a learning curve at the board level? And can we see, Nampak becoming more focused? I think you raised the issue that it was probably the last diversified packaging company in the world. Just where's that dynamic in the board's mind? If I know this is more of an AGM question, but it weighs on the results. You've obviously seen the share price today. So perhaps you can just engage a bit on that aspect.
Chris, I think the focus is where can we generate the best return for shareholders. I think historically, if you look at the glass business, over a number of years, it has not met the expectations of management, the board, and for that matter of shareholders, which leads you to the question, where should we be deploying our capital in order to generate the best possible return for our shareholders? Clearly, the metals business has been increasing its importance as a major contributor, the major contributor to profitability of the Nampak business, which suggests that there is an increasing focus on making sure that that business is adequately capitalized, that we pursue growth opportunities in that business. And we think that we have identified a number of exciting opportunities, the conversion of the line in Angola, the potential for a second line in Nigeria. There's a possibility of a food line in Nigeria going into our existing operation in Lagos. So I think that there are a number of opportunities for us to leverage on something that I think Nampak knows how to do really well, which is to make cans.
Sure, sure. And, yeah, okay, but with that, you've committed to this process to dispose of glass. Do you think you can get a fair price where it's not so recognized that, you know, the existing operations are skill deficient? Wouldn't it be better to hold on to it and try and bring those skills in or spin the operation off so that we as shareholders at least get some of the upside? Or do you think you'll be able to capture that in this disposal process?
Yeah, it's difficult to obviously, without having a firm offer on the table, to give a guideline on what we expect the price to be, but certainly in our initial indications that we have received from investment banks, we believe that reasonable value capture can be achieved from this business. The challenge that I think a single site operator has is the depth of skills that a strategic player with multiple glass furnaces in different jurisdictions is able to bring to the table in terms of deploying skills to a factory that requires it. And that, I think, is the benefit that bringing in new ownership to this business will bring. As I said, the asset is well looked after. It is strategically very well positioned. So we believe that there are players out there that will be interested in acquiring this asset. It is by no means a fire sale, let me stress that. And we are not going to let up on our efforts to improve the profitability of this business, but I think strategically it is important to bring focus to Nampak to make sure that it has the ability to work with its available capital to enjoy the maximum benefit from its investments in substrates where it has a strong competitive advantage.
Thanks, that makes sense.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, again, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone phone. We will pause a moment to see if we have any further questions. We have a question from David Patch of AIG Investments. Please go ahead.
Hello, thanks for the call, as always. With regard to the disposal of the glass business, are you contemplating or do the accounting rules require you to do anything in terms of a write-off of the goodwill or intangibles associated with the business?
Right. So Glenn Fullerton speaking. During the year ended 30th of September 2017, we did a valuation of the glass business, and we impaired the goodwill of 321 million rand and the remaining unamortized portion of the intangible asset that originally arose of 230 million. The unamortized portion was 114 million. So there was a 435 million impairment that was processed in the year ended 30th of September 2018. As we go through this process, we will have to make an assessment of the carrying value of the asset and understanding what the market will be willing to pay. We've embarked upon that process. We are speaking to merchant banks. At this stage, we can't come up with a finalized range on that. We'll have to report in due course.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from James Twyman of Prescient Securities. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much. I've got just a couple of questions on the plastics businesses. In South Africa, could you just talk around which parts of the plastics businesses in South Africa are particularly troubling in terms of where you're looking at rationalization? And then in the European business, you've seen a very sharp fall in volume last year. What sort of volume hit are you expecting this year, and also sort of around that, how you've got back to profitability, given that the volumes, from my understanding, are still have still been weakening despite, you know, getting new volume from new smaller players.
The plastics business in South Africa, I think, has over a number of years acquired a tail of products and also plants that have not necessarily kept pace with changes in customer demand and consumer patterns. And we now have opportunity to rationalize that footprint and introduce greater efficiency. If I can illustrate that point by an example, so in one of our facilities, we have 8 machines that employ a certain number of people at this point in time. We have the opportunity to rationalize production at this plant by introducing 2 new machines that will replace 8 machines. There will be a commensurate headcount reduction. There will be an improvement in the energy efficiency and material efficiency of the business as a result of the introduction of this new technology. The capital investment associated with this is rather modest. We don't anticipate that this will be a number that investors should be concerned about. A typical machine to do extrusion blow molding typically is in the order of 10 to 15 million rand. So it is relatively low capital intensity, but the associated cost savings and efficiency gains are, we think, rather compelling, and that is what drives this shrinking our footprint and our overall headcount, but still being significantly more profitable than we are today. There are also further opportunities to rationalize our production footprint. So where we have multiple plants that are relatively close to one another, there are opportunities to consolidate those, to bring them under one roof, and then obviously gain the benefits of a reduced rental and an improvement in those cost structures, overhead cost structures associated with running those facilities. Moving on to UK Plastics then, the new management team that we've introduced there about 18 months ago have done, I think, a particularly good job of focusing on operational efficiencies. And as a consequence of that focus, very close cost management of that business, we have been able to offset some of the loss of market share that has resulted from the backward integration of a major customer. There has also been a change in the purchasing behavior of major retailers in the UK due to the consolidation of the major dairies, and you will obviously know who I am referring to. We have seen a tendency by retailers to give more volume to the second tier dairies in an effort to counteract the power that is now consolidated in the hands of essentially 2 major dairies that remain after the period of consolidation of dairies in the UK. And that has given us the opportunity to improve our or to offset some of the volume loss that occurred as a result of the backward integration, and that has also contributed to an improvement in the overall guidance that we gave in terms of the return to profitability of this business. At this stage, we do not want to disclose the absolute volumes because we don't particularly think that that is commercially wise to do so at this point in time. But there will be more granularity on this when we do our half-year results presentation.
Thank you very much. Just got a follow-up one. The CapEx numbers, it's a pretty dramatic cut that you've made to CapEx. Could you just talk about whether, presumably there's some projects which you've cancelled. It would be good to know if any of those were in the public domain in terms of what those are that have been cancelled, and how much of this is just kicking down some CapEx down the road, and therefore, in other words, asking whether sort of CapEx for 2019 is likely to be low as well, or whether that's going to be spiking back up again.
I think Glenn and his team have been very successful in introducing a number of capital scrutiny processes. So we are being very scrupulous in how and where we allocate capital. When considering the capital allocation process, I think it's fair to point out that the period during which major acquisitions were made, when major expansions were built, the third furnace, the second line in Angola, an additional beverage can line in South Africa, the conversion of the tin plate lines in South Africa to aluminium, the recapitalization of the Diff Food business, that period has now come to an end. So the fact that we have been able to cut back CapEx does not signify that we are not addressing growth opportunities and that we are neglecting our asset base. On the contrary, we believe that we are spending capital at a prudent and a sustainable rate, and that the current lower CapEx that we are guiding is a good indicator of future capital expenditure, at least for the medium term, absent, and I have to qualify this, absent any major step-out projects such as a potential second line in Nigeria.
If I could just add to what Andre has said there, is that for the year ended 30th of September 2017, we had depreciation of 831 million, and our repairs and maintenance costs, which are charged against the operating profits, are in excess of that. So it's a reflection that the asset base is being well maintained. We're not cutting back on that at all. In quite the contrary, we're making sure that the assets that we've got are better maintained. It's just pulling tighter the reins on people's ability to spend money on projects which they can classify in their own minds as strategic. When you actually unpack them, they're nothing more than just a wish to spend the money. And when you work out what return is getting back to the shareholder, we evaluate that and say we don't think it's good enough. And we then are allocating capital based on the weighted average cost of capital, which is at 11.9% at the moment. We are applying a hurdle rate of 1.5 times 11.9%, which gets you, I think, to 17.8% hurdle rate. And we're very strict on allocating the capital. And I think you'll hopefully see an improvement in the return on net assets and return on invested capital as a consequence.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Our next question is from Craig Butters of Prudential. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, and thank you. Just on the second line in Nigeria, it does seem like quite a short period of time after the financial crisis to be thinking about that. So if you can just talk a little bit about your assessment of the viability and the funding thereof. Secondly, just why is there no deferred tax on the accumulated wear and tear on the existing line? And then thirdly, if you can just give an indication of the Forex losses that we'll see in the income statement. Thank you.
Right, let me talk about the second line, and then I'll hand over to Glenn for the second and third questions. when things go wrong in emerging markets, they go wrong quickly and dramatically. When they go right, they go right quickly and dramatically. The recovery in demand in Nigeria has been remarkably strong, so we're very pleased with that. And indications are that since the devaluation of the Naira, that wage inflation has now caught up with producer price inflation and that spending power is returning to the consumer. Bearing in mind that this is a very large market with a very low can pack share and that the upside for growth is therefore very encouraging indeed. Now, why are we starting to have those discussions? We are starting to have those discussions because the lead time for a project like this would be between 18 and 24 months because you have to place orders for the equipment. It needs to be installed and commissioned and the project completed. So we will therefore in the next number of months carefully monitor demand trends in Nigeria to understand what the opportunities are and whether the growth that we have seen, which has been particularly strong, whether those trends are sustained to the point where we feel confident in placing the orders for the equipment. Just something that we have previously shared with the market, but which I think bears repeating here, is the fact that due to pre-investment in our plant in Nigeria, in utilities and infrastructure, as well as warehousing space, we are able to increase the capacity of this plant, doubling it essentially, with a relatively modest investment of around $60 million, which gives us, we think, a significant competitive advantage if you take account of the fact that a new greenfields facility in Nigeria would probably cost you for the equivalent capacity about $110 to $120 million. So for essentially half the cost of a new plant, we will be able to install a second line, and that is a very core advantage that we've always had in our minds, and that we believe is now supported by trends in the market. Glenn?
All right, then to answer your questions on the foreign exchange, if I could draw your attention to the table under foreign currency movements in the SENS announcement, you will see that the closing rate on the Naira has really hardly moved. So the monetary items that we have to translate in those economies back to from Naira to dollar, and then we translate from dollar to rand, will have a relatively insignificant effect on the half-year numbers. Where there will be an effect is the devaluation of 27% from 171 to $217, the exchange rate on the Kwanzaa. And that will be to the extent that there were unhedged portions in the period. Now, if I can also draw your attention to the following table that we have in the announcement, where we had 89% of those cash balances hedged. We've increased that over the period to 100%. It didn't happen immediately. So to the extent that there have been any devaluations as we've gone along that journey, we would have had to mark to market those to the new closing exchange rate of the 217, as well as the other monetary items. To the extent that we've exported the ends out of South Africa to the Angolan market, and those have been dollar-denominated exports, with the strengthening of the rand versus the dollar, there will be a financial implication on marking to market that dollar debtor in the South African books.
Mm, okay.
Just to draw your attention to the other issue in that foreign exchange table is that the average rand-dollar exchange rate has moved from a comparative 13 rand 57 to 12 rand 97 in the period, so that's a 4% strengthening. And with, you know, half the trading profits being translated from the rest of Africa operations, that will impact the rand-based translation. The positive side will be on the debt component of around $400 million in the Isle of Man that is dollar denominated. If the exchange rates hold true at the 31st of March, because of the strengthening in the rand, the consolidation of the dollar debt will be benefited from the stronger rand.
Sure, okay. And then the question on deferred tax on the accumulated wear and tear.
All right,
in Nigeria.
International accounting standards require you to have reasonable certainty that you're going to be able to use those losses in the foreseeable future, and we've taken a conservative view on that and only raised a portion of those deferred tax assets related to the wear and tear. Now, if I can just for 2 minutes just explain how the exiting of the pioneer status works, bearing in mind that the Nigerian tax period runs from January to December. Our financial year runs from October to September. So from the 1st of January 2018, there will be a tax computation that impacts our numbers. So there will be, 9 months in this year. They take the accounting profit, and you can deduct the accumulated wear and tear from that accounting profit. You can also deduct the realized foreign exchange losses. Now, bearing in mind you're doing the tax return in Naira, not in dollars. To the extent that the taxable income is reduced, or if not potentially extinguished, by accumulated cash that has been repaid out of the Nigerian economy in this period, you are able to carry forward the wear and tear allowances to the subsequent financial period. So, there's a lot of concern that I've read around some of the analyst reports that, coming out of the pioneer status where the authorities within the tax laws in Nigeria double the tax rate, the tax charge from 32% to 64%, that will not be the effective tax rate, because you take the accounting profits minus the wear and tear minus the realized foreign exchange losses, and you apply the 64% to that number. Now, that number times 64%, and you work out the absolute number versus the pre-tax profit, it will be substantially lower. And to the extent that you even do get into a position where there is no tax payable, you can carry forward those wear and tear allowances to subsequent years. And I think it's an important point for the investors to know and understand.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Understood. I would say that given that you're considering a second line, I would hope that that you are expecting profits down the line.
We are.
From the first line and the second line.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then on the second line, what would the tax implications be there in terms of would a new pioneer status apply?
No,
is it per line or is it per? It's no, to the company. Okay.
There's no new pioneer status. You've had your 5 years of freedom there. And just while we're talking about that, the exiting from the Angolan tax holiday period, it's far simpler. You just simply exit the period, and there's no fancy, wear and tear allowances from previous years accumulated. You just simply pay tax on the taxable income in that particular year.
Sure. Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, a final reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and then one. Sir, it would appear that we have no further questions in the queue. Sorry, my apologies. We do have a final question from Chris Logan. Please go ahead.
Thanks, Andre and Glenn. Just in the past, you used to share with us the premium cans. Can prices were at in Nigeria vis-a-vis elsewhere. Does that premium still exist? Just generally, how can prices in Nigeria versus elsewhere in Africa and the rest of the world?
Can prices in Angola and Nigeria are significantly higher than global averages, and this is a function of two major considerations. The first one is that these are growing markets, so customers, in order to entice a can manufacturer to commence production, has to offer higher unit margins initially, because producing low volumes of cans through a single line is very inefficient and results in higher costs. The second one, obviously, is that these are challenging markets, and we can attest to that, and that the investor, therefore, needs to be compensated for higher risk. Now, as you are growing your volumes, it makes sense to start shedding some unit margin, because the efficiency gains and the overhead cost dilution from higher volumes grow exponentially. So you gain more overall total gross margin by shedding some unit margin in order to entice customers to buy more volume from you. What we have therefore done is that in markets like Angola and Nigeria, we have volume discounts. The reason why we do that is that we want to, particularly in Angola, make it difficult for a new entrant to target a hugely lucrative market for us by forcing the marginal can to be at a price that will not be attractive for a low volume in a new greenfields plot. So it's a very deliberate strategy on our part, as volumes grow, to start shedding unit margin. Having said all of that, average can prices in Angola, in Nigeria, are still in the order of about $130 to $132 per thousand, which is consistent with what we have indicated previously in our communication to investors.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. We have no further questions, sir.
Right. With that, it remains for me to thank you for attending this call, and we wish you, for those that are fortunate enough to enjoy a long Easter weekend, a good Easter weekend, and see you when we release our half-year results. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, sir. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes the conference call, and you may now disconnect your lines.